We're doing Chazon Ish. We're up to the third chapter, the 19th paragraph. The Chazon Ish has been stressing the idea that applied halacha, the practical details of the law, are a core component of emunah and bitachon. It's not just about the theory of what do I believe in, it's about how I apply it in my life, how I enact it, and that is really when we adhere to halacha and the details of how we run our lives, how we deal with our neighbor. We're on page Lamed Aleph, third chapter, 19th paragraph, page Lamed Aleph. And the Chazon Ish is again and again showing us from all over the Shas this idea that the essence of being a Talmid Chacham, a learned person, is about knowing the halacha, knowing what I'm supposed to do. And very often we get taken by nice thoughts and nice speeches, but that's not the essence. And that's what he's coming out to prove. And we continue B'Gemara Horiyot. We have the shortest tractate in Shas, Tractate Horios. It's all of 13 pages. It's difficult. So Tractate Horios on page Yud Beis Amud Beis, it says like this: Kishepashat lei huna bared Rav Nachman le Rav Papa din Kohen Gadol shenitzdara ma'o ba'almana. Rav Papa was wondering, a Kohen Gadol, the high priest, is prohibited from marrying a widow. What would happen if the high priest got tzaras? So he's become a leper and he cannot do his service. Can he now marry a widow? Does that, because he's demoted, because he's temporarily out of service, during that time is he allowed to marry an almana? So Rav Papa couldn't figure it out. He couldn't bring a proof either way. And Huna Bar Natan got up in the middle of the academy and proved the answer one way. It says, Kam Nashkel Roshov Yav Lebrate. Rav Papa, who was the Rosh Yeshiva after his Rebbe Rava passed away, he got up, kissed him on the head, and gave him his daughter to marry. Hinei kavua davar b'gemara. What the Gemara has established, shekol talmuda hu torah shenitna misinai, that whenever we're talking about Talmud, even the things that are derived, we're working our way back to the core tradition that was given at Sinai. We're not looking to figure out new things, we're looking to figure out the ancient. You guys know the story of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, right? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was on a plane with his grandson. Yes, you know the story. His grandson honored him. There was an atheist on his way to an atheist convention next to him, and his grandson didn't. And he asked him, what's the difference between us two? And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said to him, you know, you teach him that man keeps on getting more sophisticated, that man comes from monkey. So he looks at you, the grandfather, and he says, he's a generation closer to a monkey. There's no reason to respect that. I tell him that we have a revelation at Sinai, and man is always getting more distant from Sinai. So he looks at me as two links closer to Sinai, something closer to perfection, and that's why he respects that. I'm a step, two steps closer to Sinai. So the Chazon Ish says, when we learn Talmud, we're trying to figure out, we're working our way back to understanding what was given at Sinai. Hinei masur lanu kedushat nafsho shel Rav Papa. And the Talmud, in recounting the story, tells us about the holiness of Rav Papa's soul. Before we continue, I have to address one point which I assume is bothering you. Who said Rav Papa's daughter wanted to marry him, right? And that's so Rav Papa didn't go against the Gemara. The Gemara says it's prohibited to marry off your daughter unless she's old enough to know who she wants, and she expresses that. It must be that at home Rav Papa had heard from his daughter that guy, Rabbi Huna Bar Natan, he's someone I'm looking for a chatan like that. And so until now, he wasn't sure he wanted to give him his daughter. Now that he said that, Rav Papa agreed, because otherwise Rav Papa would be in transgression of what the Talmud says. The Talmud says you're not allowed to marry off your daughter unless she's old enough and she knows who she wants. But coming back to the Chazon Ish, Hinei maslu lanu kedushat nafsho shel Rav Papa, asher nefesh v'orayt echadu, that Rav Papa's soul and the Torah were in sync. His soul and the Torah were one. V'avata Torah shel halacha achat hotziato mishivyon hanefesh. You know, if we want to understand this, we have to think, what would be the equivalent? Can you imagine what would make you so happy that you would lose all balance? I don't know if people can imagine that. Meaning, what could happen in your lifetime that would make you so happy that you'd lose it? So Rav Papa had that with Torah. that when he found the answer to something that was bothering him so much, I had a roommate when I was in America as a Rav that would sometimes get up in the middle of the night and sit there and then go and take a sefer from the shelf and look up something. He'd go to sleep thinking about a question. His mind was always learning, and when he, in the middle of the night, suddenly the answer would dawn on him. He'd get up, wash his hands, pull out the sefer, and then write down the answer. So that's when the Torah really bothers a person, when it's really, that's what interests him. So by Rav Papa, that one halacha, when Huna Bered Rav Nosson finally answered him, so he was ecstatic. He got so excited. He kissed him on the head and gave him his daughter. You know, the Talmud says that when a person marries off their first son, so it was customary that when you married off a son, you gave him a house. And sometimes you gave him your own house. And the Talmud says, and this is in Shulchan Aruch as well, that if you married off your eldest son, your first son, in your house, then the assumption is you've given him your house. Okay, today the social norms are different, right? We don't do weddings in the house. We don't give our kid a house, necessarily. But the Talmud says that the happiness that a person experiences when they marry off their first child is to such a degree that we would assume that he has such goodwill, he wants to give him even the house. Rav Papa was so excited that he was willing to give his daughter. En safek shelo yikre kaze bereke halakha v'chokre ha'ira. He says, I'm sorry to tell you, but someone who is empty, devoid of halacha, and all he does all day is learn nice Jewish thought, mussar, philosophy, so then he has a halachic question, he hears the answer, okay, good, what's so exciting about it? It's not so exciting. It's not exciting unless the Torah is your life in a real way. And he says a real way is that I'm not just connected to thoughts and philosophies, I'm connected to the applied science. The question of how I'm really gonna do things. Ki lama yiten lo pratei? Why would a person give his daughter over that? Elo ikaru b'malat adam asicha musarit. People will tell you the essence of Torah is be ethical, learn the ethics of Torah. V'ra'u lezakot harabim, and be a kind person and help the masses. Umatu il chayfut balacha. But you got a halacha? No, so you got a halacha. I had this past Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch in Simon Beis rules that you wear a head covering. You have to wear a kippah. The Shulchan Aruch in Simon Tzadi rules that when you come to shul and daven, you wear a kippah. So the question is, wait a second, you told me I have to wear a kippah always. In Siman Bet. In the second chapter, the Shulchan Aruch says, you wear a kippah. How come in the 90th chapter, the Shulchan Aruch suddenly says, wear a head covering for prayer? So there are different interpretations. One of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, the truth is that there are two approaches among the commentaries on Talmud. Is wearing a yarmulke all day a midat chasidut? Is it an act of piety or is it obligatory? Two approaches in the Rishonim and two approaches in Halacha. Your Chalabi?
Yeah, I know that we used to not wear them.
Right. So there are very good Chalabi Jews who don't wear kippot unless they go to shul or they bench. I had a neighbor who was Chalabi, and his window was just next to mine. This was in Brooklyn, where if you looked up, you were sitting in the same room with him practically. And I would see him every night sit down to eat his meal and take out a yarmulke out of his pocket and put it on his head. You know, he wore a kippah for the meal, for making blessings. So the Shulchan Aruch's wording is a little bit inconspicuous. It's not so clear whether the Shulchan Aruch meant to say you must wear a yarmulke all day, or it's a correct act of piety. So for 20 years now, I wasn't sure, and I knew the Taz that says it's a midat chasidut, and I had questions on that. And this past Shabbat, I noticed that when the Shulchan Aruch explains the blessing we make every morning, Oter Yisrael betifara, he crowns Israel with glory. So the Shulchan Aruch, in his commentary in the Beis Yosef, writes, why do we mention Israel in this blessing more than any other blessing? You say zokef kifufi matir asurim. You say other blessings about your functioning in the day. You don't mention the Jewish people. When you talk about putting a hat on your head, you say Hashem crowned the Jewish people with a hat. Well, other people also wear hats. You don't have to be Jewish to wear a hat. We say ozer yisrael bigvura. Hashem girdles us with might. We wear a belt. Well, other people also wear belts. Why do you mention the Jewish people? So the Beis Yosef writes, because it is incumbent upon us to cover our heads. That's why we say, Otel Yisrael betifara. Hashem crowns us with glory. So when I saw that, I said, okay, so the Shulchan Aruch over here is giving us a clear insight as to which side he's going with, that it's incumbent. You have to wear a yarmulke. It's not just a midat chasidut. So I was very excited, because I had this question for about 20 years now. And I mentioned it to someone who came to us for the Shabbos meal, and they looked at me like, okay. They're not excited, okay? To me, it's exciting. 20 years, I have a question. After 20 years, I found the proof, one way. So the Chazon Ish says, if you're working on it, if you think all of Judaism is just ethics, so okay, I'm an ethical person, I don't have to get so excited if I figured out one halacha. V'omnam mikan stira gluya le'ele shechasru nafsham et kinyan ha'ava shel halacha v'lo shlimu nafsham ba. He says, from here you see a clear proof that people who say, leave the halacha, that's not so important, and people don't work on really mastering halacha, shezot tachlit ha'shlimut ha'ova lefanav yitbarach. In essence, you want to be a whole person, you got to know how to lead your life. To lead your life means knowing halacha. It's not enough to know the theories and the ethics. V'kfar iflig b'yisod zeh ha'grach mi'veloshin b'toseft ma'aserav. And Rav Chaim Mivilashin, the disciple of the Gra, in his addition to the book Maaseh Rav, he goes at length, he goes on about this, Bomro kol tfilotai me'odi hayti noten ba'din echad mechudash min ha'gemara. He says like this, all the prayers I've prayed my whole life, I'd be willing to give them up, the merits of all the prayers, in order to understand one halacha which I haven't understood in the Gemara. So this is the great machlokas between Rav Chaim Mivilashin and the Hasidim, right? The Hasidim were very upset about this line, because the Hasidim put a very big stress on prayer. And Rav Chaim Mivilashin said, I'd give up all my prayer for one halacha. And they said he went too far, right? But that was his point. He says, we all know you can't take your good deeds and do transactions. I'll give this mitzvah for that. I'll do this good deed instead of that. Aval patach b'mashal piv. All Rav Chaim Mivilashin didn't mean I'd give up my prayer. Of course you have to pray. He wasn't saying I'd give up all my prayers and what? And he'd be a guy, you know. Everyone has to pray. What does that mean? He's giving an allegory. He was coming to impress upon us that a person should dedicate himself to understanding what he's supposed to do. And we have a responsibility to learn all the way from the Gemara through the halacha. We should know that that's the highest level of service of Hashem. And that's a higher level than prayer. And he quotes it from the Talmud in Shabbos. The Talmud says that Rav Yirmiyah was learning with Rav Zeira. And Rav Zeira saw that Rav Yirmiyah was rushing to go daven. And Rav Zeira gave him over the head. He said to him, the Pasuk, Mesiroz no mishemoa Torah gam tefilato toiva. He who removes his ear from listening to Torah, then his prayer isn't beloved in heaven either. So that's what he's quoting here. I would just add that in the learning of halacha, there's a partnership. The Gemara says that nashim shananot, the women can lead a comfortable life, more comfortable than the men. Because if she did hers in the partnership, so it's his responsibility. It says in the mitzvah of taking vows. It says, let's say a woman took a vow, so her husband can annul the vow. But that's provided that he annulled it the day he heard it. What happens if she takes a vow? She says, I'm not going to shower this year. And he heard it, and he said, fine, good for you, enjoy. Okay? A day later, he says, you know what, I changed my mind. I'm going to annul your vow now. You can take a shower this year. It's too late. The halacha is that his annulment doesn't work. The Torah says, what happens if she listens to him? He told her it's annulled. He was made for the neder. And so she went and took a shower. Technically what she did was she transgressed. She transgressed her vow. The Torah says it's her husband's fault. The Torah says he's going to pay the price for it. So the Torah is teaching us in that mitzvah that in the responsibility of building a home, we have different responsibilities. She doesn't have to go learn Talmud for 20 hours a day. That's your job. And when she's partnering with you and facilitating your ability to learn, the Gemara says that that's then she's doing her end of it. And when she asks you the question, if you don't know, verify, but it's your responsibility to know. We have different responsibilities. We have different directions to grow. So what we learned here in the Chazon Ish is our responsibility to know the halacha from the source. And obviously in Machon Meir, we can't master all of the halacha this year. But we can get there. We can get there. Remember that Rabbi Akiva didn't know one pasuk when he was 40 years old. He couldn't finish the pasuk Shema Yisrael. Rabbi Lez ben Hurknus was 28 and he didn't know how to bench. Rabbi Akiva, it seems from some sources, was illiterate at age 40. And yet he became the greatest rabbi of the Jewish people. So we can get there. And we have to put that as a goal and a dream and an aspiration. And we have to remember what the Chazon Ish is hammering in over and over again, that the essence of leading a Jewish lifestyle is knowing the halacha. It's not enough that I have a theoretical view of what the ethics of being a good Jew is. There's an applied science here. And I'll just add an important point. Learning Gemara becomes more pleasurable as you go along. Very often, there's a famous story of someone who came to Rav Nevenzel. Now, I've been by Rav Nevenzel Siyum HaShas twice this year already. Okay? This year, twice. Rav Nevenzel is someone who finishes Shas more than once a year. And I was there when it was over 100 times that he finished the Shas. So Hashem should give him long years, and he should merit to finish the Shas many more times. A student once asked him, "Rebbe, I don't like learning Gemara. What should I do?" And Rav Nevenzel answered, "I learned for 20 years before I started enjoying learning Gemara." Learning Gemara, like the Medrash Tanchuma says, you're entering a labyrinth that's dark, unclear. You read a few lines, and then you read a few more lines, and you still have questions. It takes time. It's not fun in the beginning, but it gets better. The more you learn, the more pleasurable it is. The easier it becomes, the more depth you can see in it, the more insights you see. I'll give you a small example, okay, of how learning Talmud works. We just mentioned the story of Rabbi Akiva, right? Everyone knows the story of Rabbi Akiva, 40 years old. He's working as a shepherd for Kalba Savua, one of the wealthy philanthropists of Jerusalem. The period is just before the destruction of the Second Temple. And Kalba Savua's daughter says, "I want to marry you." Okay, we all know the story, right? Different variations to the story. And her father says, "He doesn't know how to read a single pasuk. You can't marry him." And she says, "No, I'm going to marry him." She sees his humility, his modesty, and so she marries him. And her father goes and takes a vow that she won't see a penny from his wealth. So far, everyone knew the story till here, right? Pretty well-known story. They're living in dire poverty. They sleep in the hay. That's the only thing they have. It is Rabbi Akiva's second marriage. He has a child, Yoshua, from his first marriage. He is in his late 30s. She's a young girl. And Rabbi Akiva hates the rabbis. Rabbi Akiva has a famous line. He says, "If I could, I would bite the rabbis like a donkey." They asked him, "Why like a donkey?" He says, "Because some animals bite the flesh, some animals break the bone, a donkey does both. And I want, that's how much I hate the rabbis." And then one day, sometime into their marriage, his wife tells him, "You know, you have potential, go learn Torah." Till here, we know the story. More details, less details. Let's take a step back. What was his wife thinking when she married him? How do you marry someone who doesn't know how to read Shema Yisrael? He doesn't know how to bench. What kind of father is he going to be to the kids? What was she thinking? You take a story which you knew until today, and now you analyze it from a little bit more depth. We can understand their father. The guy doesn't know how to read Shema. What kind of father? Will he keep the laws of family purity? He can't bench. He doesn't know brachot. So we always look at the end of the story. Look at her dedication. He learned for 24 years, and he became the greatest Talmid Chacham. Let's rewind to the beginning of the story. But what was she thinking? Was it pious to marry a person who is so unlearned just because he has potential, and who says he'll realize that potential? So we say she's a tremendously pious woman, and all of the oral law rests on her merits because she pushed her husband to learn Torah. But wait a second, was it a correct move to marry him? I just wanted to bring that out as an illustration of a story which you can see on one level, and then you can take it to another level. Is that the Shem? One day we'll revisit the story.